Let's start, guys, with the breaking news from this morning, and that is that Connor Brown, the ex-Leaf, is locked in with the Senators for 3 years at $3.6 million. Really nice fit in Ottawa, had a really nice start to his career in Toronto. I think got a little bit lost in the shuffle as he became predominantly a fourth liner, a guy with a little bit of offensive upside. Not a ton relative to his peers, but some offensive upside. So it's nice to see him get paid. Justin and then David, like I look at this and I go, Ottawa's not a bad place to play right now because they got to spend some cash to get to the cap floor. So you can score a deal. Dadonoff did. Connor Brown, he's got to be happy with what he's taken home for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, nice number, a nice situation for him, and actually a nice situation where he's still going to be young enough in 3 years that if he has success on this deal, which I expect him to, he could be in a position to sign another deal, potentially when the salary cap starts going back up. And I think this is a great situation for Connor Brown, who, by the way, very good hockey player and someone who really works at his craft. And I just feel like the opportunity there for him in Ottawa is, you know, kind of allow him to be the best NHL player he can be. So, you know, DJ Smith loves him. He's a guy that just does everything right all the time, never shows up on video in a negative way. So this is a great deal for both team and player in my eyes.
And I'll even go as far as to say, Scotty, I think you're diminishing his offensive ability. I mean, he was a prolific scorer back in Erie, you know, 120 plus points in one season, I believe. You know, he put up great numbers. In one season in Toronto, particularly, we scored more than 20 goals when they did have him in a more offensively minded role. And he'll be a 20-goal scorer in Ottawa. So they need that. They need those guys, those complementary pieces. They don't have their full foundation in place yet. They have a lot of, obviously, great prospects going to be coming up through the ranks. I think they're rated the number one group of prospects right now that are, you know, going to be NHL-bound. But Connor Brown's a great piece, and as Justin says, I mean, there's a guy who just doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He works hard. He doesn't complain. He's probably what Brian Burke would call a low-maintenance player, which is what one thing you really look for when you're in the management side of things. So I think it's a great signing. And there are, you know, if they can just decide to spend some money, Ottawa could be a very great destination in the next 3-4 years because they have so much young talent there.
I've had a couple messages already come in saying, wow, over three for Connor Brown. And you know what? I tried to look at some comparables and other guys with similar point totals. He had 43 points last year in 71 games. And you get Brendan Gallagher, you get Adam Henrique, you get Josh Bailey, you get David Krejci. You know, these are some pretty good players. And these guys are all making $5.5-7 million a year. Where are you guys with that number?
So for me, Ziggy, like, I think it's so hard to put up points on a bad team. So, like, I just think that a point total like Connor Brown put up in Ottawa on a team that was so bad is, like, not representative of his, like, true value, what he can do on a with good line mates on a team that's clicking along. And now I don't expect Ottawa to be clicking along, but I'm just saying he's better than just his raw point total because he hasn't played on a good team there in Ottawa. But yeah, the number 3-6, I think it's totally fair. Not only, as David mentioned, is he a guy that can get you 20 goals, and I expect him to get over 20 goals for each year of that contract, but they also put him out there on the power play. You can play him up and down your lineup. He's so versatile. In no way do I think that's an overpay.
It's a good deal. Bottom line is it's a good deal, and as Justin said, Connor Brown will be able to walk up to free agency as well. So it works out on both sides. I think it's smart. Pierre Dorion, I think, had a very good offseason on all accounts.
Justin Bourne, David Amber with us. It's Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday morning. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So the Chicago Blackhawks go the New York Rangers of 3 or so years ago, their route, and issue a letter to their fan base saying, hey, we're rebuilding. Now, pardon me for being ignorant. I thought the Blackhawks were rebuilding. I didn't feel like I needed to be told that.
Yeah.
I know Taves and Kane and Keith and Seabrook are still on that team, and they move Saad and Corey Crawford is gone, but they were already overhauling the roster in the places that they could. Am I missing something here? Like, because there's been a lot of talk, well, how's Taves and how's Kane going to react to a letter like this? To me, it's been obvious for a year or two.
Yeah, I think so much of pro sports now is managing the expectations of your fans. And, you know, you see going into like an NCAA tournament like March Madness, you see the coaches say, just heap praise on the other team because they want to be the underdog. There's nothing better than having like low expectations. You know, everything you do good starts to feel really good and then it kind of gets the ball rolling. So I feel like for the Blackhawks, it's a matter of setting the expectations a little lower for the fans. I wonder if they thought that like, hey, we just beat the Oilers in a play-in round. I hope our fans don't think we're going to be good because that's not happening. So it just feels like managing fan expectations. And then with the players, maybe there is some value in saying to them too, you know, yeah, we may not be going out at the deadline to pick up players to make a push every single year, and this isn't going to be the year. You know, those guys are making a ton of money, and if they have to ride out a bad season or two while the team sells the deadline set of buys, probably good to set their expectations a little more accurately too.
Okay, so let me jump in, David, and then Ziggy, Justin, if you've got a comment on it, come in at the end. Does this potentially set up a Patrick Kane trade? And I'm going with him before I go with Taves or Keith, because I think at this point, Patrick Kane on the ice is the best of those players. He's still an elite player. Are they setting the groundwork for the possibility that that happens at some point sooner rather than later?
Well listen, that would be a PR nightmare, I believe, for them. I think Taves and Kane, you know, I think they should be doing the Yzerman route where you stay with one team your whole career and you're synonymous with that team. I think part of why they put out that statement is Stan Bowman was feeling a little bit of heat, clearly, in that marketplace. The expectations are high. And as Ziggy said, I think it was a PR move sort of saying, hey, yes, we've lost a few pieces or we got rid of a few pieces from our Stanley Cup winning time. And we are turning over a bit of a new leaf. And I think that was basically trying to buy some time. And as you say, Ziggy, as you said, Justin, managing the expectations. Patrick Kane to me, I mean, you know, when you talk to GMs, they say you got to listen to any offers. If a team that feels they're one piece away and Patrick Kane is a significant piece away from winning a championship, calls you up and they're going to offer you the world, yes, of course, you're going to listen and consider it. Do I think Stan Bowman's out there actively dangling Patrick Kane as a, you know, trade possibility? That would surprise me. I think that guy still has a lot left in the tank, and he what he represents to that, you know, city and that hockey market. Remember, he scored the Stanley Cup championship goal in 2010. I think that would be a really hard PR situation for the Hawks to overcome. I don't see that happening barring something really crazy put on his plate.
Yeah, you got to remember what Tay said, right? The expectation for the other leaders on the team and myself is to come ready for training camp every year and be a playoff team. We prepare ourselves to win a cup for our fans. I've never been told that we were going through a rebuild. That has never been communicated to me for that matter. A lot of this comes as a shock. I mean, this is all coming up. The letters coming out. It's all because of their captain. I really don't see this any other way. This isn't about, okay, we're going to be bad. Let's manage what we have. I don't think this is a New York Rangers situation. I really think this is, okay, we have our leaders coming out publicly. This is starting to look really bad. We should release some kind of statement. Just the way I see it. I don't know.
You mean to manage... to counteract Taves' comments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a strange situation there. And they're both making 10.5 a year, Kane and Taves. So those are tough contracts to trade, especially Taves. I just wonder that if the right deal comes along, if Patrick Kane doesn't end up getting moved to a team that could not only just under the cap, but from a salary budget point of view, take on the salary. Thoughts on Ilya Mikheyev apparently settling under a number that had been verbally agreed to help the Maple Leafs stay under the cap. I mean, he we know that salary arbitration numbers are teams come in low, players come in high, But, you know, the agent is saying, hey, look, he came in even lower than we had verbally agreed to help the Maple Leafs because he wants to win a Stanley Cup. Here, you talk about another PR game being played here.
Yeah, I think that needs to be touched on because I'm reading a lot of stuff about Ilya Mikheyev taking less for the good of the team and this noble knight doing the Leafs a favor. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know if an agent telling us that his player took less money. From what I'm hearing, this may have been, you know, an agent trying to save face a little bit with that contract. They weren't able to get what they thought they were. There was some misunderstanding with how the arbitration process worked, I think. The short of the long is that this is a great deal for the Leafs. Mikheyev has a chance to greatly overachieve this deal. I don't think we should focus too much on, you know, how much less this player took for the good of the team. You know, how much less could he have taken? Like, you don't call a guy back and change the number that drastically. Are we talking 10 grand here? Like, was he going to get 3.3 instead of 3.29? What are we really talking about here?
So well, and
that's on, a questionable one.
Yeah, and the AAV, David, if he can be the Kapanen or the Janssen of this team and fluctuate between the second and third lines wherever he ends up, and if he's a 20 to 25 goal scorer for you or even better than that, at that number, it's huge. And it with the two-year term, it gives the Leafs a bit of certainty in an uncertain time.
It's an incredible signing for the Leafs. The potential's there. Remember, this guy was lighting it up, before he had that horrific injury. And then when they came back and went to training camp, all the eyes were on him. He was voted the MVP of the training camp for whatever that's worth. I think the flexibility, he can play up and down the lineup. He's shown he can mesh well in the top six. He plays with a little bit of edge as well. He's got some skill, clearly, at a very reasonable number. The Leafs have to be, you know, overjoyed with that. And quite frankly, this is what Dubas and Shanahan and all the Leafs brass said when they signed these big, the Tavares, Marner, Matthews deals. They said, it's now incumbent on us to find value elsewhere, whether it was the Tyler Ennis's of the world or whether it's going to be the Wayne Simmons of the world or the Joe Thornton's of the world, et cetera. You've got to find these guys, low risk, high possible reward, and hope they fit in into this framework where you have these incredibly high paid, you know, trio of forwards. So this is another peg. Is another guy, again, I imagine him as a top six forward, potentially playing with the likes of Nylander and Tavares. I mean, that would be really, really a good fit, provided he could do it over an 82-game schedule. We're going to have a compressed schedule, so we won't have to do it in the first year over an 82-game schedule. This guy can be brilliant for 3-4 months. It's incredible value for the Leafs.
Only a couple minutes left. We talking about the East right now. You have the Sen, Sabres, Habs, Leafs all making moves, and then you have the Bruins that you lose Krug, you lose... you don't get in on Ekman-Larsson, not certain what's happening with Chara. Rask is up in the air. What have you guys thought so far about the Bruins not really kind of keeping up with what the East has been doing?
Well, my thoughts are that, hey, Toronto might be actually able to catch the Boston Bruins this year, and then they're not even going to get the chance to because there's going to be realignment and they're going to end up in some Canadian division. It's actually, depending on how you felt about the Leafs offseason, I'm quite bullish on it. I really like all of a sudden their defense looks like a really good defense to me, and I don't think their bottom six is much worse, so I quite like their offseason. I think Tampa's going to have to get a little bit worse. I think Boston is almost definitely going to be a little bit worse, so I liked how they were shaping up in that Atlantic division. I am fascinated to see what happens if it becomes a Canadian division. All of a sudden they're playing, some lesser teams, to put it nicely, because there are some teams in Canada that have some question marks.
Oh, I disagree, Justin. I think the Canadian division would be the strongest of the four divisions. I mean, quite frankly. Aside from Ottawa, tell me what you don't think is a playoff team. When you look at up and down that roster, when you look at Edmonton, and I know there's question marks in Edmonton, but when you have arguably the two best players in the game or two of the top five players in the game, I'm not going to bet against that. I'm just not going to. You look what Calgary's done in adding Markstrom, adding Tanev. They've improved appreciably. Vancouver, yes, they haven't maybe improved their team. They certainly lost some pieces with Toffoli, et cetera. But having said that, they still have a great young nucleus, and they made some noise last year. And if Thatcher Demko could be anything close to what he was in that short playoff appearance, my goodness. And they've added Holtby, who's a Stanley Cup winner. Winnipeg clearly has a great nucleus of young players. I still like what they have. And then Montreal, I think, might be the most improved team, at least on paper. And hats off to Mark Bergevin. Look at all the additions he's made, not just re-signing Petrie, re-signing Gallagher to reasonable deals. But when you go out and you add Toffoli, you get Josh Anderson in that trade. You add Edmondson. I like what Montreal's done. You have some support with Jake Allen now with Carey Price in that. I think that Canadian division would be very, very tough. And it's almost, you started it out by saying it's too bad they don't get to go up against Boston. And you're right. I think that would be, Boston of all the teams, I think, has had as difficult an offseason as anyone because they clearly have gotten worse. Torrey Krug's gone now. And they still have to figure out the Jake DeBrusk situation.